Pleasant good afternoon to you, and welcome to the Lunchroom on Radio Caribbean International for Wednesday, May the 7th, 2025, and it is program number 1369 of the Lunchroom. I'm your host, Calix George Jr., and of course, in addition to 101.1 FM radio, you can also get us at our website, rcistlucia.com, and we are also streaming live on Facebook. And you just have to search for the official page of Radio Caribbean International on Facebook, and please be sure to like and share that as well with your friends and family. If you want to call in to tell us what's on your plate today, the number to do so is 452-3046. Again, 452-3046. You can also reach us on our WhatsApp number. That is 724-0008. Again, 724-0008. And that number, you can call into it or message in on WhatsApp. Some birthday greetings for today. And we first want to send out some best wishes to Mr. Embert Sergis. Happy, happy birthday to you, sir. And we do hope that you are having a fantastic birthday celebration. We also want to send birthday greetings out to Mr. Dwayne Monrose. Happy birthday to you. And we hope that you're having a fantastic birthday as well. Also to Mrs. Krista Smith-Peter. Happy, happy birthday to you. And wishing you a wonderful birthday celebration. It's also the birthday of Annette Christopher. Happy, happy birthday to you. Wishing you a very wonderful and blessed day. A bit of a look back in time and some of the events that occurred back in history on this day. In May the 7th, 1867, Swedish chemist Alfred Nobel patented dynamite in England. And it was the first of three patents he received for the explosive material. In the year 1912, on this day, Columbia University approved plans to award the Pulitzer Prize in several categories after establishment by Joseph Pulitzer. 1915, on this day, the RMS Lusitania was sunk by a German submarine off the coast of the southern coast of Ireland with 1,198 lives lost. 1945, on this day, the unconditional surrender of the German Third Reich to the Allies was signed by General Alfred Jodl, and that happened at Reims in northern France. 1952, on this day, the concept of the integrated circuit, the IC, the basis for all modern computers, was first published by Geoffrey Dummer. And in 2017, on this day, Emmanuel Macron won France's presidential election, defeating Marine Le Pen. We now head into our dish of the day. The daily dish is part of the kind compliments of our good friends at Tiles Plus.
One test for your home, I see. Bathroom, kitchen, pantry. Need test for your balcony. Come down to Tiles Plus, satisfaction guarantee. Tiles Plus, Tiles Plus, Tiles Plus. Big test with unbeatable cost. Customer service, A plus. Need all kind of tests. Come down to Tiles Plus. We also glad gas and vanity. Box, doors, you'll see. Come down, don't mind nobody. We got the best tiles on island. Trust me. We are located Land Street in Castries, Bossage Grozy Lane, and Slack Street in Dufort. Telephone number 453-7939.
Serving now, the Daily Dish.
Welcome back to our program for today. And of course, we are in the throes of the St. Lucia Jazz and Arts Festival. Tonight, the festival heads to Pigeon Island for the first of many of the main stage events. For this year's St. Lucia Jazz and Arts Festival. And, of course, many have welcomed the innovation of this particular night, dubbed Kingdom Night, and an opportunity for many to take in a more inspirational, spiritual form of music. And it has certainly broaden the reach of the Jazz and Arts Festival in this regard. And so, very interesting, of course. In fact, yesterday there was a pure jazz event, I believe, as well. But of course, in the pure jazz events being of a smaller scale, more intimate settings, indoor spaces. But there was, in fact, also a major fringe event last night, and the community of Moshi in the northeastern part of St. Lucia, a community that is very well known for its deep cultural traditions. The church over there, in fact, in memory of La Woz, named after St. Rose de Lima, and they have lots of different musical traditions, solo and the like, coming out of that community, that region of Moshi in Grosley. And certainly the crowd went out in very large measure, very large numbers, to be able to actually enjoy what is in fact a free show in the midst of many other shows, of course, despite it doesn't seem that the price necessarily scares a lot of people, because certainly when we look at the numbers that went out to places like Miku and Babono and many of the other areas, Soufre, of course, that were all paid shows, still tremendous patronage and support from the audience. But tonight, the first of the main stage events occurring at the Pigeon Island National Landmark. It also is a transitionary period as well, and lots are happening in the city itself. And the Arts in the City component of the St. Lucia Jazz and Arts Festival is certainly a very, very well thought out and conscious, you know, initiative taken on by the Cultural Development Foundation. And they've already set up, and they've got lots to, no doubt, to share over the next couple of days as that component continues to take life. And for those who, in fact, went out, and those who found fish over on earlier on in the week at the National Cultural Center, were blown away and were really in awe at the wonderful spoken word and the literary performances, the poetic overtures that were provided to the audience, seemed to be very, very well received. And certainly it goes to show the breadth of what exists in terms of the artistic talent here in St. Lucia. You know, quite often, even in places around the world, you see the attempt to embellish your transport hubs and your train stations and your airports with public art. And that's a very, very big movement that we've seen. Perhaps started off very long ago, the likes of the Parisians and the Muscovites in their metro systems made a point of you know, really developing lots of artwork along the walls, murals adorning and these spaces, and the importance of celebrating these points of entry and exit have been done in the past. Of course, in the case of St. Lucia, we don't really have a bus terminal as yet, although we did hear some discourse in this year's budget about plans afoot to be able to develop a bus terminal for the city of Castries, as well as one in Vieux-Fort. But the importance of celebrating art, especially in places where people are coming and going, is really, really important, and has been certainly important. We enjoy that when we travel and we pass through airports and whatnot. And I just wanted to perhaps highlight an initiative that was actually done recently, it would appear, by, I believe, a gentleman by the name of Mr. Edward Romulus, an artist. And he seems to have done some really wonderful, a really wonderful, you know, display of art at a, it was Archie Romulus is the name, and a lovely bus terminal. And we know that bus shelters or bus stops tend to be very simple structures. I mean, just a place where somebody can shelter and wait for the next bus to be able to come. But he really did some marvelous work in uplifting and designing a bus shelter and using floral designs and, of course, a very, very large picturesque red rose in the backdrop of it. And certainly, you know, gave a completely different image to what a bus shelter, a bus stop could be here in St. Lucia. So, of course, kudos to the authorities who made it happen, and, of course, to the artist, Mr. Archie Romulus, for ensuring and reminding us that art really should be everywhere. It should be celebrated in our buildings, in our public spaces, in every form that we can find. And that is really important, and that certainly is, I think, the essence of art in the city, to be able to give the city vibes, to be able to give the city life and activity and buzz is always very, very powerful. And we see it all around the world. People are, in fact, witnessing just that, the power of arts to be able to transform. I'm not sure if we appreciate how, you know, amazingly successful thus far the St. Lucia Jazz and Arts Festival has in fact become. Over 30 years in terms of a journey, and of course we're still hearing debates by some politicians as to who started the Jazz and Arts Festival, and of course they've even been court matters over that matter, I believe, over the issue of the name of the Jazz Festival and all of that. But that's all an aside. As a country, we've embraced it, and it has continued up to this point, albeit a short period of a break, a sort of an interregnum within the entire period. But it's back, and it has certainly been happening. And I was actually interacting with some gentlemen from the neighboring islands of Antigua as well as St. Vincent who've come across here with their wives to be able to actually enjoy the St. Lucia Jazz and Arts Festival. And they were just taking in the fringe event of Moshi Jazz last night. As I said, a free show. And they were astounded at the scale of what they thought was just simply a community event. And of course, to see the extent of the setup, to see the number of people who actually came out to support it, and the quality of the performances, and everything was very, very, very of a very high standard. And we really do need to commend a number of the individuals who are in fact making these festivals happen at the community level. In some instances, you actually have communities that may have a fair bit of infrastructure in terms of the institutions that can support these events. And of course, I think of Soufregs, for example. It has a mini stadium. It has, you know, the Soufreg Foundation, and that can certainly support a lot of the work of Soufreg Jazz. But some other communities don't necessarily have what Soufreg has in that regard. I mean, Castries, of course, has the benefit of the Castries Constituency Council, and of course they're putting on a special event on Thursday and Friday, which really looks to target the development of the future of the jazz, the up and coming art youngsters, youth, and so of course they're putting on the Junior Jazz Festival at Serenity Park this Thursday and Friday. But some communities don't actually have that level of institutional strength. And so really, it depends on a lot of goodwill, a lot of effort in place by committees, by individuals who have come out and who've supported over the years because of whatever experience they have and skills and expertise, they offer that. And in fact, quite often free of charge, to help and assist in terms of the community aspects in the Jazz and Arts Festival. So certainly kudos to those individuals who are doing so. Of course, in the case of Moshi, that's pretty much how they've been operating. A lot of it has been through the goodwill of people, some of them from the community, some of them not even from the community, who've come on board and who continue to be able to provide that kind of support and development for communities like Moshi. Of course, in the case of Arts in the City, this is a production of the Cultural Development Foundation, and it is a really amazing milieu of different expressions. So it's not just about the music element of it, which is there, but they are infusing the dance components of it. And of course, we've been seeing the efforts of doing so, remembering the likes of Teresa Hall and her contributions to the development of folk dance traditions right here in St. Lucia. And of course, big shout out to Iza. He was at Moshi as the MC last night. But certainly her contribution is being remembered, and that legacy is so important for where we are at right now. And hopefully, of course, as we continue year after year, we will see other individuals being honored. Last year, we saw Sir Llewellyn Xavier and his contributions in terms of the visual art and the breadth of his production, certainly in terms of his artwork, was on display in the largest ever art exhibition put on in St. Lucia, which happened last year. So every year they're trying to innovate, they're trying to bring a different perspective, a different opportunity for people to be able to express themselves in different ways. And that's very, very commendable. So in terms of the dance, in terms of the music, in terms of the crafts, and I think there is, in fact, an initiative to promote crafters, a very, very important element there. And there's I think it's called TITAC, which is now a part of the Jazz and Arts Festival, ensuring that individuals can also showcase their work. The various individuals who are making jewelry, who are making bags, who are making accessories, who are making ornamental items, and the whole breadth of wonderful craft work that is going on through TITAC. So good initiative as well in that regard, and also trying to bring on other elements of art, of course, the visual art also. And there's always been a sort of an opportunity for educational aspects within that setting. So again, kudos to that aspect. So it's important because we do have lots of different artists who are coming in generally musical artists and for the jazz festival. But there has to be that opportunity to share and to interact and to for musicians to be able to potentially even here locally to be part of maybe a master class being put on by some of these artists and to share ideas. Very, very important exchange and knowledge sharing is very much, should be part of the St. Lucia Jazz and Arts Festival. And so to the team that is putting that on, the likes of Drenia Frederick and of course Mr. God and the board of the Cultural Development Foundation, kudos to them. And of course, ensuring that there still is that that presence within the heart of the city at the Derek Walcott Square is very, very important. In fact, as you would know, on that square, there are two busts, one of Derek Walcott, who of course we know as the artistic, literary icon of excellence for us here in St. Lucia, winning the Nobel Prize back in 1992. But sometimes we don't appreciate that, even though Sir William Arthur Lewis was an economist, he was a scientist, he still is, as far as I know, the only person of African descent to have won a Nobel Prize outside of literature and peace. He's the only one in the sciences to this day. But the quote that is on his bust, right, at the Derek Walcott Square, is a very, very important quote indeed. And it certainly reminds us that he had a very broad sense of self and understanding of the importance of development. And development is not just purely about industry, but it's also about the arts. The arts feeds into creativity, feeds into innovation. And, of course, on his bust, it does say, a country without the arts is a cultural desert. A country without the arts is a cultural desert. And that was a line attributed to him back in the 1971 graduation address at the University of the West Indies Cavehill campus, where he was addressing that august body. And so it's very important to note that we have to be very much cognizant of the importance of arts in our society. And it is not just something that is still treated as an aside, but is in fact given sufficient amount of space within our economy, as well as certainly within the development of it through our education system. And I still think we've got a ways to go in that journey, that it should not be, an individual should not have to necessarily choose to say they're not doing a particular art or, you know, and so all of those areas. We've made some progress in regards to, I think there are now theater arts and being offered, and there's visual arts, and of course there's also music, but we have to look at how many students are actually taking up those courses. How easy is it for students to be able to take up those courses as well? And we certainly have to be thinking about that aspect, that especially when we're speaking about the workforce of the future. The workforce of the future can differentiate itself very much so in terms of how innovative and creative they can be. And so developing that side of your brain is vital. And so that is a very important step that we have to ensure, that in developing the holistic individual, the Caribbean individual, that individual is not just simply a worker in a factory or a worker in a hotel or a banker or somebody who's working in a hospital. But that person also, even if it may not necessarily be their main form of income, but if they so choose, it could very well be that they also see a place there to have artistic and creative expression in those spaces. Because we know that even in a hospital setting, there is a need for creativity. There is need for inspiration. There is need for ensuring that element, that emotional intelligence, is actually also there. So having that multidisciplinary exposure, that comprehensive understanding of the human being, is very important. And so our education system also needs to be more reflective of that reality, and that certainly we place more emphasis or reasonable, equal emphasis on ensuring that our students are not just only getting doing some science subjects, they're not only doing math and English, but they're also ensuring that they can express themselves and their talents, whether through song, through dance, through visual expressions, whatever the case may be. Very, very important indeed that we embrace that. And let's face it, the way the world is going right now, it's all about content. It's all about, and then of course, that's another component of the arts right now, the digital content, the digital media that is very much front and center in around the world. So the photography is now becoming artistic, right? And expressing that way. And as well, film, right? Which is sort of takes and brings together all of these various art forms in a very, very impactful way. And I just want to also shout out to congratulate the producer and the team that was working on St. Lucia's latest film, Heartfall, which I understand was launched not too long ago. I think it was over the weekend or so. And kudos to Mr. Elijah Anatole for producing what seems to be, just based on the trailer, I haven't actually seen the actual movie as yet, but seems to be a very thrilling production, all shot in St. Lucia, St. Lucian scenery, St. Lucian actors, St. Lucian producers, doing photographers and videographers and editors, a full St. Lucian undertaking there. And so congratulations to all of those individuals who are making it happen in the area of film. And let's hope that we can also see maybe in moving forward a St. Lucia Film Festival, or maybe even tagged along as done as separately, or as well tagged along as part of the St. Lucia Jazz and Arts Festival as we move forward. We've said quite a bit here already, and I think it's a good time to take a pause. That's our dish of the day. When we come back, we'll take in our weather report, thanks to the St. Lucia Med Services and Tiles Plus.
This has been The Daily Dish.
One test for your home, I see. Bathroom, kitchen, pantry. Need tests for your balcony. Come down to Tiles Plus, satisfaction guarantee. Tiles Plus, Tiles Plus, Tiles Plus. Big tests with unbeatable cost. Customer service, A+, did all kind of tests. Come down to Tiles Plus. We also got glassware and vanity. Books, doors, you'll see. Come down to my new body. We got the best tests on island. Trust me. We are located Land Street in Castries, Bosses, you Grozy Lakes, and Clark Street in Viewfort. Telephone number 453-7939.
Island style. Oh, yeah. We got the time to make you go. Oh. We got the time to make you say. Yeah. We'll have to make the right choice. Island style. Whoa. We got the time that will make you happy. Island style. Oh yeah. We make your dream come alive in Island style.
We are tiles and tin sets, pieces and ground. Need peace out the house out for the best price and the latest style. Take a little drive down to Island Style Car.
We got the time to make you go. Oh. We got the time to make you say. Quality, yeah. Price, service, choice. It's all at Island Style.
Visit us at our showrooms in Belarusa, Rodney Bay, on the John Crompton Highway, Castries, and behind Ruby's Gas Station on the Library Viewfort Highway. Or call us on 450-452 or 453-TILE. Island Style, Tile and Bath. When you think tile, think Island Style.
This is Radio Caribbean International. It's now time for the weather news.
Hustle 1.1, it's now time for your weather report as of 12 noon today, presented by Island Style Talambert. The forecast for St. Lucia Valley for the next 24 hours, winds will be blowing from between the east and southeast near 14 miles per hour or 22 kilometers per hour. The weather, fair skies, occasionally becoming cloudy with a few showers. The forecast for the Les Antilles, over the Leeward and Northern Windward Islands, partly cloudy to cloudy with scattered showers, some of which may be heavy and isolated thunderstorms. Elsewhere, fair to partly cloudy skies with a few showers. And the weather summary, moisture and instability associated with a low-level trough system will continue to cause cloudiness with scattered showers and isolated thunderstorms over the northern half of the Les Antilles during the next 24 hours. Light to moderate easterly winds will persist across the eastern Caribbean region during the next few days. And this was your weather forecast as of 12 noon today, presented by Island Star Talambert.
This has been RCI's Weather News. For more information, call the Weather Hotline at 454-3452. RCI 101 number 1.
Island Star. Yeah. We'll have to make the right choice. Island style.
set spaces and ground. Everything you need to start the house out. For the best price and the latest style, take a little drive down to Island Style Car.
We got the time to make you go. Oh. We got the time to make you say, quality price, service choice. It's all an Island Style.
Visit us at our showrooms in Belarusa, Rodney Bay, on the John Crompton Highway, Cass Street, and behind Ruby's Gas Station on the Library Viewfort Highway. Or call us on 450-452 or 453-TILE. Island Style, Tile and Bath. When you think tile, think Island Style.
And welcome back to the lunchroom here at Radio Caribbean International. Of course, the number to call in to tell us what's on your plate today, it is 452-3046. Again, 452-3046. And you can also message in via our WhatsApp number. That is 724-0008. Get to the phone lines at this time. And good afternoon. Welcome to the lunchroom. Hello, good afternoon. Okay, looks like we may have lost that call. It would appear. But yes, again, as I said, the number to call in is 452-3046. And we do hope that we can take in some calls at this time. Good afternoon. Welcome to the lunchroom. What's on your plate today? Hello, good afternoon. Looks like we seem to be having a bit of an issue there. Well, we don't know, but let's keep on trying to see if we can get in some calls. Again, 452-3046. And as mentioned, of course, the St. Lucia Jazz and Arts Festival continues today with a number of different events on. But of course, there are lots of other things happening in St. Lucia. We want to touch on the matter of healthcare in just a bit, but we'll take in a call now. Good afternoon. Hello, good afternoon. I'm not too sure what the issue is right about now with that, but we do hope that, we can solve that matter soon enough. Sometime last week, the Prime Minister of St. Lucia visited the neighboring island of Martinique. And of course, that is a country that we have had a very long-standing relationship with, particularly in the case of healthcare. And that was certainly one of the matters up on discussion with the French officials as well as our local counterparts here in St. Lucia. The matter of outstanding bills owed by St. Lucians to the hospitals over in Martinique certainly were matters that were part of the conversation. We have a clip about that, but we'll take in a couple calls first at this time. Head to the WhatsApp number first. Good afternoon. Yes. Good afternoon and welcome to the lunchroom.
Yes. Good afternoon. Yes. Actually, I tried calling on your landline, the 452 number, but I think there's a problem, so it wasn't connecting.
Yeah, I don't know. We're still seeing that line blinking, and yes, I'm not too sure. We'll try to see what's going on.
Yes, so just to add to the discussion you had about Derek Walcott and Zafa. I recall years ago, Derek Walker said at an event at the cathedral that the artist invents and the scientist discovers. You know,
the artist,
that was quite profound.
The artist invents,
uh-huh. And then the scientist discovers.
And the scientist discovers.
Yeah.
So, that's an interesting.
I mean, it actually makes sense, you know.
Yeah. Yes. That's a nice way of putting it. Certainly.
Yeah. Yeah.
Thanks very much for sharing with us on that one.
No problem. Take care. Bye bye.
And of course William Arthur Lewis actually came from a family that were quite good at music. They were very, very accomplished pianists, and of course, even to this day, you have the likes of Sir Vaughan Lewis, a long-standing organist at the Trinity Anglican Church here in Castries, St. Lucia. Let's get a call at this time. Good afternoon and welcome to the lunchroom. What's on your plate today? Hello, good afternoon. Hello, good afternoon. Nope. Okay, looks like we're having a few issues indeed with our phone lines in that regard. But we're going to see if we can what's the issue there. But of course, the number to call in is 452-3046. Of course, just as the last caller on WhatsApp mentioned the cathedral, we should perhaps note that the conclave for the election of a new pope, a new pontiff for Bishop of Rome, who heads the Catholic Church around the world, the 267th pontiff, that begins today. It has already begun, in fact. And we should have and see one vote happen before the end of the day. Let's try taking a call. Good afternoon. Welcome to the lunchroom. And what's on your plate today? Hello? Okay, I'm not too sure what the issue might be with respect to our lines, unfortunately. But hopefully we can see if that can get resolved. See the light blinking again. Let's see if we can actually connect with this caller. Good afternoon and welcome to the lunchroom. Hello, good afternoon. Hello? Okay, now still having some technical issues there. But as I was mentioning, of course, yes, so you have 133 cardinals who will be participating in the conclave. And a conclave is effectively a secret election, you could say. I mean, all of them come together in the Sistine Chapel for that event. Let's take another call. Good afternoon and welcome to the lunchroom. Hello, good afternoon. Nope, looks like we're still having some challenges there. Our apologies, of course, to those callers who've been trying to get the line. Not too sure exactly what the issue is as yet, and hopefully we can get that resolved. I'm seeing it blinking again, but I'm not too sure how we're going to be able to sort that one out. But as I was saying, the conclave, which of course is happening over at the Sistine Chapel, which is just adjoining or just in the within the Vatican, but near to the St. Peter's Basilica, that has been going on since the 12th century or thereabouts, I think. And that was to, in fact, ensure that the elections could, in fact, happen within a reasonable amount of time for the election of popes. And so this time, 133 cardinals will be deciding amongst themselves, effectively, who will, in fact, become the 267th pontiff. They, in fact, can choose cardinals outside of the 133, and there are other cardinals in that regard. But of course, but those who are not included are those who are older than the prescribed age, I believe, of 80. So once you are over 80, you cannot, in fact, be part of the election there. What certainly is perhaps more representative, we could say, of the groups that are there now is that there are, this time, I think, over 70 countries represented. So there's a much greater spread of individuals who are part of this body that is selecting. And so you'd find, for example, over the years, the vast majority of the popes, in fact, came from Italy, came from, well, or regions that would be considered Italian or spoke Italian. And so you have, of course, have had from other parts of the world. And in fact, this was, well, Pope Francis was the first hope to have come from outside of the old world, if you like, coming from Latin America. Albeit, however, coming from Argentina and coming from himself having an Italian background. That, of course, perhaps had some sense of connection there. This time around, though, lots of interest being placed on the potential of popes coming out of Asia for the first time, and potentially even Africa. And although they have technically been African popes in the past, coming from North Africa, along the Mediterranean, the potential for actually having a pope coming from West Africa is certainly on the cards, the likes of Peter Turkson of Ghana, or potentially Cardinal Serra of Guinea, Robert Serra. He's one of those who's been seen to be a potential leader or front runner in that regard, former prefect emeritus, prefect of the Congregation of Divine Worship and the Discipline of the Sacraments, Robert Serra. And he was named by Benedict XVI, the predecessor to Pope Francis. So it'd be interesting to see how certainly these matters pan out. This is not the first time we've heard of African front runners. Cardinal Arinze at one point was seen to be a potential front runner in previous papal conclaves, and so we'll have to wait and see the outcomes of these votes. Another major front runner, the likes of the much younger Cardinal appointed by Benedict as well, that of Luis Tagle of the Philippines, and 67 years old, Cardinal Tagle, and very, very charismatic, seen to be an individual, very popular, could be a very popular amongst young people. But of course, there are suggestions as well that it may very well end up being that the likes of Cardinal Parolin, who is effectively was the second in command at the Vatican, the Secretary of State of the Vatican, much more soft-spoken, diplomatic individual, may very well also be one who may be selected by the 133 cardinals who have come together in Rome to be able to make that determination. Now, as I mentioned, of course, we seem to be having a few issues with our phone line, so our apologies for that. So it doesn't look like we're going to be able to take in any calls. I'm not sure if we want to try just one more time to see if we actually can get through. Good afternoon and welcome to the lunchroom. No, it doesn't look like we're, for some reason, we're seemingly not being able to connect with our calls this afternoon. So our apologies for that. I was also mentioning before that, of course, the matter of healthcare. And this has been a very topical matter. Of course, it would appear that the opposition United Workers Party has put healthcare as one of the three major issues upon which they want to effectively litigate, if you like, the performance of the government of the St. Lucia Labour Party, which is currently in power. Healthcare, crime, and cost of living very boldly placed on their lecterns at their various political party meetings. Now, healthcare, of course, has been a very interesting issue over the years for St. Lucia, and it has been one that has been behind in terms of the quality of healthcare over the years. And we've seen a lot of issues, a lot of debates, and debates between the parties as to, in fact, who has been truer to the cause of healthcare than the other. The matter of OKEU, for example, is one such issue. And there was lots of back and forth over the matter of whether, in fact, OKEU should even have been built. At the time, of course, the United Workers Party was not in favor of building a new facility, but in fact just upgrading the Victoria Hospital. And eventually, after many different studies were done, I think a decision back in 2002 was taken by the then Kenny Anthony administration to move forward on the establishment of a new general hospital for St. Lucia. The funds for which would have come from what was left over of the Stabex funds. Now, Stabex funds were funds that had been tied to the shift that had to occur within the banana industry as a result of the loss of and impacts of the changes to the industry, the dropping of preferential treatment, preferential arrangements, and you know, because of the whole situation, the World Trade Organization, the WTO, the European Union agreed to provide some funds to be able to support these islands. And St. Lucia was, in fact, the biggest beneficiary in that regard, because it was the largest producer of Windward Island bananas. And so out of that came this effort to improve the quality of healthcare, which was a major issue in our islands. In fact, up to a day like today, for example, we even in some of the banana belt areas, one still sees relatively high prevalence rates of cancer. And the big question is that tied to some of the practices by way of pesticides, the use of pesticides in these banana belt regions? We know there is an issue, of course, and still is a major issue over in Martinique in that regard, the use of certain pesticides and how that has in fact impacted on the lives of individuals. So this whole thrust towards trying to improve healthcare, a major aspect of it was in fact the achievement of better health infrastructure. And so, of course, the move towards the establishment of the OKEU hospital went forward, and it was designed very, very carefully based on a lot of different studies looking at the population size, looking at the health burden, and estimating how many beds would actually be required and what types of services would be required. And so came out a plan and a design for the what is now the Owen King EU Hospital. Unfortunately, of course, sometimes we see changes in approach and changes in administration. And one of those, in fact, led to, although, of course, there was almost no choice because the decision to build that hospital had already been taken and had already been signed off by the Anthony administration, and they went ahead with it with the EU, providing, in fact, what is the largest grant ever by the European Union to a country in the OECS. And unfortunately, though, there was there had to have been some commitment by the government of the day to have co-financing for this project. By the time there was, in fact, a change in administration, a decision was taken, hey, we cannot afford some of the co-financing, and so we will in fact scale down on the OKEU hospital. And that effectively resulted in the loss of what is now called the fifth finger of OKEU. So the entire build-out of what was deemed to be necessary was in fact not achieved. We're seeing the impacts of that today, because there are simply just not a sufficient number of bed capacity. There is not a sufficient amount of bed capacity within OKEU. And so the administration now must find the resources to, in fact, ensure that the OKEU is, in fact, built out to be able to support all the services that it was originally designed to do. But what also happened, unfortunately, due to the length of time that it took to actually commission the hospital, lots of equipment was actually purchased for that hospital. And unfortunately, a lot of the equipment ended up as a result of not commissioning and not having the appropriate maintenance regimes in place, meant that some of the equipment ended up getting damaged. And after millions of dollars spent, a lot of it was just simply not usable. And that is, of course, another unfortunate situation with respect to our healthcare system. So you still have a situation where individuals don't have access to some of the diagnostic equipment, like the MRI machines that should have been available and that are not. And then, of course, we have the very, very sad situation with respect to that of St. Jude Hospital. Now, in fairness to the government of the time, back in 2009, already there was work ongoing with respect to one general hospital. And then, of course, the country found itself in a situation where it had a fire at St. Jude Hospital on the 9th of September 2009. 999. Of course, it led to the loss of four lives, unfortunately, and the relocation of that hospital. And a decision was taken by the then government, the then administration of the United Workers Party, which included, of course, Mr. Alan Chastney and Mr. Guy Joseph, who were members of the cabinet, who signed off on redeveloping the St. Jude Hospital at the current location, utilizing the existing original buildings of St. Jude Hospital. This was a decision that was taken by those gentlemen at that time. Somewhere along the line, they decided that they were no longer going with that plan. And that was after $98 million had already been spent on that facility, and a tremendous amount, nearly a third of that $98 million was in fact for equipment on order, for materials and other equipment for the use in and installation within that hospital, whether it was kitchen equipment, equipment for the laundry, diagnostic equipment on hold with GE, a lot of other equipment in storage, right? And a lot of it, unfortunately, we don't even know what occurred with a lot of that equipment up to a day like today. Of course, we saw the actions being taken by none other than Mr. Joseph himself, who went out very, very publicly, going to various suppliers and demanding that they hand over supplies, and demanding that those supplies be taken away from them and put in under his control, or the control, assumingly, of whoever he decided. And that was the approach that was taken. And then after all that happened, you then pretty much say, well, we're no longer going with that plan. We're creating a brand new plan, which, of course, meant the pouring of more concrete, the establishment of more steel and putting up of more steel structures and spending a lot more money that arguably need not have been spent in the first place. So here we are again at a point where, and remember, this is after Mr. Joseph himself came out very publicly and said that if he had not completed St. Jude Hospital within his term in office, he should not say a word on the matter of St. Jude Hospital. But of course, we are seeing him coming out and speaking on the matter of St. Jude of late, and speaking to the project. But let's remember that the very many things that were used to justify not building, not going ahead, not completing St. Jude Hospital, those decisions were signed off on by a cabinet, which included Mr. Joseph, which included the current leader of the opposition as well, who at that time seemed to have had no issue with the heights of the ceilings, seem to have had no issue with the sizes of doors and hallways, because all those things were part of the original designs. So unfortunately, we are still seeing a lot of discourse by the opposition on an issue which, in fact, they have almost said that they really should not have any standing to speak on at all, as a result of the fact that they were not able to complete it within their term in office, but are still trying to come forward to say that that what needs to happen is that we should go with the box and we shouldn't go with this one, and a lot more of these types of suggestions. The reality is that the country has spent a tremendous amount of money on St. Jude 1.0 and on St. Jude 2.0. And the reality is those these structures belong to the state of St. Lucia. At the end of the day, it is in everybody's interest to ensure that all the structures get utilized appropriately and ideally within the context of a healthcare facility, right? Because it's all within the same complex, within the same compound. And of course, that would make what best sense. The truth about it, though, is that we have far more space now, floor space, than is even required for a facility, which was required for the facility as per the scale of what was required in the south of the island. But the country will have to find ways in any event to ensure that whether it's in the original St. Jude, that has to be finished, as well as whatever can be utilized with respect to the south wing or the box or St. Jude 2.0. Because it all certainly needs to be utilized in the greater interest of the country and the healthcare of the country. So as to whether it may end up being utilized as a tertiary care facility, as to whether the box could potentially be part of a specialist treatment center, maybe in partnership with some other entity from the outside, if they are so willing to be able to inject a considerable amount of money that would be required to be able to complete that facility. It, of course, has to be thought of within the total picture. But the reality is it cannot be reasonable and fair for the individuals who continue to work at St. Jude Hospital, in the stadium, in the hospitium, to be remaining in that kind of environment for very much longer. And so, therefore, the priority has to be completing what could easily have been done as quickly as possible to ensure that those individuals, those patients going there, the persons providing services to those patients can do so in a comfortable and safe environment. And so that, I think, is hopefully what we would like to be able to see achieved this year. And let's hope that we can see and finally achieve that as a country. That's the program for today here at the lunchroom. And of course, again, our apologies regarding the phone lines. Hopefully we can get that rectified by tomorrow. And hopefully you'll be able to join us for another program, God willing, of the lunchroom on Radio Caribbean International. Have a great day.